Computer in front of me. It's 6:30 p.m., so I declare the General Council meeting open. I begin by acknowledging that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. And I'll let everyone know that there'll be audio recording of the meeting and that'll be available in due course. I ask elected members if they foreshadow any possible item of a conflict of interest in the agenda, and I can start with myself because there's a non-paid position that I'm nominated for, so I'll declare a general conflict of interest, but we'll stay in the room and probably not vote. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I have a question because I'm on the CAP at the moment, so we have an item which has relevance to CAP. We're only noting a petition, so I don't think I have a conflict of interest, but I'd just like to confirm.
I'll ask Ms. McKenzie. I don't think so.
Through the chair, I don't believe so because the petition is simply for noting and council has no decision-making function in regards to that particular item.
Other than noting it, which has no material impact on the planning decision. That's what I would think. Councillor Luscombe.
Yes, I have a material conflict of interest with regards to item 11.1, One Cumbria Court. So I'll leave the room for that item.
And I understand that's employment. Because of your employment.
Correct, with the Department of Education.
With the Department of Education. So that little bit of detail, just a thumbnail, does have to be recorded with it as well. If there are no others, we'll keep moving along. Would someone like to confirm the minutes of the last meeting? Councillor Telfer, thank you. Seconded by Councillor Pryor. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So we can go straight to deputations. And just for councillor's benefit, I'll let you know that we do have that substantial confidential item in the middle of the agenda. Normally, those complex matters are dealt with earlier on in the agenda, but I'm going to seek leave of the meeting to have the confidential item deal with at the end of the other items. So if no one objects, we'll move that and otherwise go through the agenda. So we'll have the deputations deal quickly with the petition, and then the next item, in fact, would be Cumbria Court, so that will be of interest to the petitioners, the deputants and their supporters. All right, so leave is granted by the meeting. So now we come to the three deputations, and I can tell everyone that these have been put in the agenda in the order in which the requests came in. So first we have Puddle Jumpers, and I believe we have Hannah Black, is it? So please come forward. And Mr. Harrison, our Chief Executive, will show you how to use the microphone. It's very simple. Now, because of the significant nature of the deputations and the choices involved, I'm going to give each speaker a full five minutes and then be quite liberal with questions if people have questions of the speakers, because it's the last chance to hear from them before we make a decision. So you do have 5 minutes to present the case. Away you go. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to begin by acknowledging we are gathering on the land of the Kaurna people, and I'd like to recognise the traditional landowners past, present and emerging. My name is Hannah Black, and I've been a volunteer with Puddle Jumpers for the last 2.5 years. I'm speaking today on behalf of my colleague Melanie Tate, the CEO and founder of Puddle Jumpers, on our intent to lease the Mitchell Park Neighbourhood Centre. Puddle Jumpers has been operating for nearly 11 years, initially starting out with holiday camps for children who don't live with their birth parents. We firmly believe no child should grow up hungry, alone, feeling unloved, or like no one believes in them. All children deserve to be happy, safe and healthy because all kids matter. Around 8 years ago, Puddle Jumpers moved into providing food relief services as a family strengthening program. It has become a way to support children living with their birth parents by removing stresses on the family unit and reducing food insecurity. In 2017, we moved into a Glendore site where we operated food relief programs on Monday nights, which continued right up until the beginning of the pandemic. As the effects of COVID-19 struck, our demands increased by over 300%. Thus, we began operating a unique drive-by food relief operation, which helped vulnerable people in 13 different locations, with our reach extending to as far as Aldinga. Our aims as an organisation are to reduce the risk factors related to child abuse and neglect, and ultimately reduce the number of children being removed from the care of their families. However, this style of drive-by food relief isn't conducive to building the long-term relationship based on trust and stability with our families and individuals needing support. As the pandemic settled, we'd hope to return to our Monday night food program and withdraw drive-bys, yet we haven't seen a decrease in those needing support. Consequently, we have not wanted to cease the drive-by program at the risk of abandoning vulnerable people who often have nowhere else to turn. In the meantime, we've opened a food hub in the western suburbs, which operates 7 days a week and sees a steady stream of families come in for food relief, as well as other wraparound services, such as toiletries, clothing, cooked meals, and social connections. In the latest food bank report, 3 in 10 Australians now experience food insecurity that had not gone hungry before the pandemic. Those who were already struggling are now doing it even tougher, and they've been joined by people who've never experienced hunger before. We've spoken to welfare agencies, schools and kindies in the Marion area who've witnessed families not having enough clothes or food to be able to send their children to school and have simply gone without. The Puddle Jumpers services, through the use of the Mitchell Park Neighbourhood Centre, would complement services offered by the new Sports and Community Centre. There are no plans to duplicate what is already being offered there. So are the needs of our targeted groups already being met by nearby charities? The families that we support advise us the contrary. Some who've reported they've been turned away due to daily quotas, or the hours of operations were not accessible, or worse yet, they did not have the right ID or evidence on them to access food. There are a number of reasons why what we do is different to those other services being offered. We are the only food relief service of this kind that targets children and families first, both through their development and their safety. More than anything, our community hubs are a space for anyone and everyone to thrive. I recognise with all change, there is potential for an impact on the community. We have a commitment to helping the community, not hurting it. We will continue to liaise with the kindy and hold an information session for the neighbours before we open to explain what we want to do and to ask them about their concerns. We will involve them in the process. The number of families who need help to get them through is growing, with the cost of living continually increasing. We want to help and need the council's support to do so. We're prepared to work with all stakeholders involved and urge you to consider our request to lease the site to us. In closing, I would like to share a quote from Deepak Chopra. Giving connects two people, the giver and the receiver, and this connection gives birth to a new sense of belonging. Thank you.
Thanks very much, and I might say perfectly timed. Thank you. So open to councillors if they have any questions. Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. Mr. Black, thanks so much for your presentation. I have two quick questions. Mm-hmm. One is, can you tell us how many other organizations providing food stuff to vulnerable families in southwestern suburbs?
I'm not quite sure. I know there are a few. I know there's Marion Life Services. I can't answer that question, sorry.
Oh, that's fine. I would always prefer an honest response. That's fine. Councillor Masika, did you have something else?
Yes, the following up question is, Ms. Black, how many other outlets Puddle Jumper have across Adelaide Metropolitan?
How many other food hubs?
Yes, which you have.
Yep, we've got one other one in the western suburbs, and we feel it's been quite successful.
No, I'm talking about the metropolitan Adelaide.
In metropolitan Adelaide, we've only got one other food hub.
You say two, not one?
I don't believe I said two. One in the western suburbs.
Because we were told there was another one in Noarlunga, so something like that.
No, I said when we were doing drive-bys, we had drive-by food relief programs in 13 different locations, with one in the Hackham or Dinga areas.
So just to clarify, is a drive-by where there's a public place or a supermarket car park or something where you just stop and people...
So it's temporary and it's only for an hour or so. So it's not a permanent site, if that makes sense. Does that answer your question? Thank
you. Very well. Councillor Hoffman.
Submission tonight.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how many families do you service?
Around 1,500 to 2,000 a week.
1,500. And you said you've got two operating hubs. That's one in the western suburbs and the other one is still at Glandor. Is that correct?
It's not operating on Monday nights anymore.
Okay.
Yep, it used to before the pandemic. But since the pandemic, we've moved to operating the mobile style food relief programs. And last year we opened the Hindmarsh site.
Okay.
Which is a permanent site.
Okay. So I guess I'm trying to get a sense of what your point of difference is as a service.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got it, but I didn't quite get it. So if you could speak to that just for a little bit, that'd be great.
What our service provides is different.
Yep. So how do you differ from another food supplying service?
Well, I think we remove any sort of barrier. So we don't require people to prove that they need help. So people experiencing mental illness or don't have all their documents, they're able to access food from us. We don't discriminate against people. So all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life can come to us for help. We also offer a lot of wraparound services. So we do children's activities. We have a truck that lets people shower. We also have access to hairdressers who donate their time and skills to give people haircuts. So I think we have a lot of wraparound services as well as food and drink.
I've got one more question.
Sure.
If you have complaints from the neighbourhood,
mm-hmm.
what is your process in dealing with those complaints? And I guess if you've got one complaint in, do you speak to those people and try to resolve it, or is it after a multitude? What is your process there in how you reach the community and try to resolve whatever it is?
Well, first, just by keeping an open line of communication and going around to the neighbours and introducing ourselves and letting us be known. So there's a lot of comfort in them coming to us if there is an issue. So they'll have our contact details, we'll be a familiar face, we'll be touching base regularly. And if there is an issue, I fully believe we could work through it together.
Just a follow-up question from what Councillor Hoffman was asking about. Mm-hmm. The 1,500 to 2,000 individuals or families, the number that you mentioned, Ms. Black, how many would you say are going through the fixed site at Hindmarsh?
I don't have a value for that.
No. Okay. No. Councillor Valescu?
Thank you for your presentation coming in. I guess what would be the perfect type of venue for your services?
The perfect type?
Yeah. So if there was no money, no obstacle, you could get exactly what you wanted, what would you be looking for?
Probably a site that has a few rooms, just so that we could have different activities and different community groups are able to operate their activities alongside ours. One that's accessible by public transport, one that will allow us to open at hours that are not offered by other groups.
Okay. That's so would you be looking for a drive sort of through service there as well, or would it be?
Not really. The problem with the drive-by food relief programs was that in each location we're only set up for an hour and a half. So the amount of people who were seeking help from us was quite concentrated. So there was a lot of need for places for cars. Whereas with our proposed model, we will be open across a 7-day week. So we're not going to have as many cars piling up.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no others, thank you, Ms. Black. You can take your place in the public gallery again. And now we'll call on Mr. David Collins from the Bowden Brompton Community School. And so Mr. Collins, if you've got some brochures to hand out, do you want to do that now or at the conclusion of your talk? All right, your principal will do that while. Just can we facilitate that? Yes, thank you. And Councillor Valescu, did you have a point of order or something?
I think if we get them now, it might distract from the presentation. If I can get it right at the end. Deliver them at the end of the presentation?
Maybe at the end of all three deputations. Sorry to trouble you, those who've already started picking them up, but if you're happy with that, Mr. Collins, we'll leave it till after the three deputations.
My name's David Collins. I'm the assistant principal of Bowden Brompton Community School, and I run our Christie's Beach campus. So Bowden Brompton Community School has been working with young, vulnerable, disadvantaged young people across Adelaide since 1976. We have three main campuses and a nurture program stretching from Christie's Beach through to Salisbury, and our main campus is at Brompton. We also run a nurture program at a Beefield site. So if we could just click through to the next slide. Many of the students who attend our program have experienced trauma in the form of family breakdown, domestic violence, and mental health disorders. A large proportion of our students have learning difficulties and learning disabilities, including a range of verified disorders. And BBCS is staffed on nominal enrolments of one teacher to eight students, so we can provide a much more intensive support program. If we could go to the next slide, thank you. So our vision is to empower students to develop the skills to make positive life choices and contributions to their community. We have 150 nominal enrolments across the metropolitan Adelaide from Victor Harbour right the way through to Gawler. So we cater for a wide geographic location. Next slide, please. And as part of our program, we offer a range of adventure therapy and nature therapy programs, including things such as pedal pre, bikes programs, and we really work hard to enrich the learning program for our students. And for many of our students, go on to achieve TAFE qualifications and move into working in construction or automotive industries and childcare. Next slide, please. We propose that Bowden Brompton would be interested in beginning a program in the inner south to cater for students from the Marion Council area and surrounding councils who are not being successful in schools in the area. We propose that the site would be used to host a program for 10 vulnerable students to engage in a positive education nature learning group supported by Bowden Brompton Community School. Next slide, please. As you can see from the map, the location of Currumbia Court is directly in the middle between our two main campuses at Brompton and Christie's Beach, which provides a unique opportunity for us to be able to support the students in that program, but also to engage in cross-campus activities with students from our main two sites. We would be mirroring the lesson offerings that were available at our other two locations and be doing a lot of co-collaborative work between the sites. Next slide, please. We believe that the benefits to council would be that we would be willing to look at signing a five-year lease. We would partner with our vet trade providers to involve our senior school students in the maintenance, upkeep and improvements of the venue. And the proposed activities for the venue would not require any significant financial investment from council, as the building seems to be currently fit for purpose. Next slide. The benefit to community is we'll be opening up more space in the inner south for young people struggling in public schools within Marion and the surrounding areas. We support our students to engage with local businesses and community groups and to find employment and training with local businesses. We maintain relationships with organisations, including OzHarvest and local churches, to distribute charity donation to residents of our communities, involving students in philanthropic work and giving back to the community. And we actively seek to foster gratitude and philanthropy in young people by organising and supporting charity events, fundraisers and community activities, including through the use of our enterprise coffee trailer, which we use to support community activities. Next slide, thank you. Some of the potential, any potential issues, I think in terms of traffic, we wouldn't have a lot of traffic because most of the kids would be travelling to the site on public transport. We currently operate two locations that are joined to current childcare centres, so we don't foresee any issues with that. And we work very closely with SAPOL and the communities in which we work to encourage positive relationships with community. So that's
all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, open to elected members if they have any questions. Councillor Telfer, then Councillor Vlescu.
Yes.
In your original submission and in what you've just said now, you consider that the site is fit for purpose. My question is that we as a council feel some obligation to, as the tenant, as the landlord, offer normal compliance requirements, which are quite costly to us. Do you have any intention to cope with the extra demands that compliance would?
Do you mind if I open that up to my principal to answer? He's probably in a better position to answer that question as the head of the school. I would suggest that we would be able to probably complete a lot of the maintenance and upkeep of the venue. Any additional investment would probably need to be negotiated between the school and the council. And probably we would need to go to the Department for Education, really, to get an answer about that, I would suggest.
Mr. Leondaris is there. Did you have anything to add, Mr. Leondaris?
Through our programs, we do run the vocational education programs, as Dave alluded to. In that process, our students can be involved and work alongside tradespeople. So part of our commitment to that is our student programs funding, and that would support also any upkeep within the standards of the Marion Council or educational department standards as well.
Anything else, Councillor Telfer? No, Councillor Vlescu.
Yeah, and I guess to add some context, that's the DDA requirements. So could be fit for purpose now, but when new tenants come in, the DDA needs to be lifted up to, so that would be what that would be about. I guess if you had to choose an ideal type of facility for what you offer within the city of Marion, what would those features include?
Can you answer that? So obviously accessibility is key for our students. Many of them unfortunately don't receive the same level of support from their families as many other young people in school settings, so they do rely heavily on public transport. We also provide a transport service for the school, so that's the main one of the main factors. So location, the fact that the venue is located in the middle between two of our current sites is quite attractive to us, because it does provide the opportunity for us to do cross-campus work with kids. So kids from our Torrens Road site coming and working with students at that site and vice versa. So really the current Cumbria Court property actually ticks a lot of boxes for us. It has an outdoor space which would be suitable for students to take breaks. I think there's the space inside the building is suitable for the types of activities that we would be running with students. So it is quite an attractive location for us. Yeah.
And I just wanted to clarify, I wasn't suppressing your voice with those flyers, but when I give presentations and people have a flyer, it's people aren't listening, they're reading. So just
that's all right. Any other questions?
Yeah, one more question. What is your point of difference as far as services provided for vulnerable people?
So we work very heavily with the students to develop an individualised program for each child. I've worked at the school for over 12 years and, I can attest to the difference that Bowden-Brompton Community School has made to a large number of students in the time that I've been working there. I think that our flexibility, we have a relationships and wellbeing framework which heavily guides the practice within the school. We have a goal setting framework which means that every child in the school is working towards academic goals. I think that the difference between Bowden-Brompton and many other flexible learning options is that we offer a full-time school-based program with wraparound mental health and health supports available to students and families, and we work very heavily with families to keep students engaged, to reduce suspensions and exclusions, and to turn vulnerable kids around.
All right, Councillor Masika, then Councillor Taylor.
Yes, Colin, thanks for your wonderful presentation. This, I want to know the numbers. With the two campuses, Bowden, and also Christie Beach, how many people, how many students?
We have 150 enrolments across the three sites.
No, I want to know specifically from the Marion Council.
How many we would be taking from the Marion? So this program would... Well, I know that at my campus, I have maybe four or five out of the 32 students that I have on my site probably come from the Marion Council area. And I think that the Torrens Road campus also has a number of students that travel from Edwardstown and the surrounding suburbs around Mitchell Park and attend. But I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but we could get that information to you if you would like it.
Councillor Taylor, then Councillor Hoffman.
Yes. I had a very similar question. I was just asking about the numbers in terms of Marion students in the catchment area, and also whether you had a waiting list. Does it act like a waiting list? And so that's probably two questions there. And the third one would be future planning. If you were to increase the numbers from 10, will that be fit for purpose?
We probably wouldn't look to increase the numbers beyond 10. We find that the type of students that we work with and the size of the venue and the location means that smaller class sizes really work better for our students. Sorry, what was the first part of the question again?
The first part was in terms of the numbers from the catchment area.
Yes. So we would be looking to open up for more enrolments from the Marion Council area. So at the moment, as you saw from the map in the first graphic, there's a big gap between Christie's Beach and Torrens Road. So there's a big section of Adelaide which is we have between our Torrens Road and our northern campus, there's less space, so we're able to cater for more students from within that zone. There is a bit of a gap currently between Torrens Road and Christie's Beach. So students from within the Marion Council area who come to us currently have to travel quite a long distance to either get to Torrens Road or to our Christie's Beach campus. And we'll be looking to, those students who are currently travelling a long distance to get to school to talk to them first about relocating to this new program.
And just finally, just based on your response then, Have you already spoken to those potential students so we can...
So we're very heavily involved with the interagency support network within the Department for Education, so the behaviour coaches that work alongside students who may be struggling in mainstream schools. I've had conversations with behaviour coaches who are working within schools in the Marion Council area who have expressed a need for additional places. Okay. And so I think that would be supported by the behaviour coaches and in terms of having another venue available for them.
Perfect. Thank you.
Councillor Hoffman.
Thank you very much for that presentation.
That's all right.
I guess, again, I'm looking at your service and the impact it has on the neighbours. It's in a very residential area, and you're talking about going outside and using that space. It doesn't have any fences. So can you talk to us around how you're going to manage that from a risk perspective and from a community perspective?
Yes. So as I indicated, respect, responsibility and resilience is really our part of our core values, and we work very heavily with students to develop positive relationships with our neighbours. We work very closely with SAPOL to manage student behaviour. We also risk manage students for off-site programs, so we certainly would be risk assessing any student that we were going to place into that venue to see if they were suitable for that space. In terms of the programs that we would be running, the outside space would predominantly be used for break times for students just to have fresh air. The program would more than likely be spending the first part of the day working on curriculum activities, learning, classroom-based learning activities. Then usually what happens within our setting is that students will go on an excursion to either a local reserve or to do some nature therapy or engage in adventure therapy. So the types of activities in terms of like going and kicking a football or going out and engaging in sort of more play-based activities, we would generally take our students to locations that were away from Cumbria Court. We would take them to local reserves or parks or to bike tracks in line with the type of lessons that we already run at our other settings. And that matches the model of the other schools in that students do an academic part of the day followed by high interest activities which engage kids and encourage them to attend school.
Okay, thank you.
May I value add to
just to give you Leon Darris? Yes, go ahead.
If the proposal comes to fruition, we'll designate a high ace vehicle, which is a 12 seater, hence only the 10 students and allowing for two staff. So that would be the access that they could use to either risk assess and get someone out of the area if they're going a little bit wobbly or dysregulated, and also allow for the excursions, as David talked about.
Mm. And the fact that it's 20 minutes from our two sites means that we can also provide support in terms of sending additional staff or vehicles to pick up students and take them home in the event of any behavioural issues.
Councillor Hoffman, thank you
very much. And I guess similarly to the last bank of questions that I asked, what is your process if you do have complaints from the neighbours?
Certainly we would be, you know, taking those very seriously. We enact the same behaviour management processes as most schools. We have suspensions and exclusions and those types of things. So we would be seeking actively to engage with any neighbours or any residents who had any concerns around any student behaviour. And we have no problem involving police if required in to support residents or to manage incidents. Although I have to say that I don't foresee that as being, you know, something that's going to happen very often. So.
Yeah. Right, thank you. If there are no others, then thank you, Mr. Collins, you Mr. Leandaris. You can resume your seats. And perhaps if we just wait until the following deputation has finished, that would be a courtesy and put everyone on the same footing. You're very welcome to do it. In fact, maybe one of the staff might assist with that once the next deputation's finished. So we're inviting forward now Ms. Marina Filipova from the Sambo Federation of Australia. And you've heard, you've seen how it's done now. 5 minutes, and that'll be followed by questions. Thank you.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I would like to say thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of our organization here today. And I would like to expand on the projects and the organizations I've been volunteering for last 10 years. So SAMBA Federation of South Australia, that's the national, that's the state body for the sport of SAMBA in the state of South Australia. We have been operating in the City of Marion Council for the last 9 years, and currently we're based at the Marion Fitness and Leisure Centre. So we operate on three different levels. So we provide professional trainings to professional athletes to represent country and the state at international, national and world championships and tournaments. We provide trainings in amateur sport, so on the basics of real Aikido, family club, family sports camps, and self-defense and violence prevention programs. We also run various social programs, which are sports for people with disability. There are currently programs for visually impaired people under the SAMBA curriculum. We also have successfully ran programs for children from disadvantaged families. And I would say that the project has been very successful, but unfortunately it was in the city of Norwood a few years ago. And currently we do provide trainings to children from the families, from disadvantaged families, at a very low cost or at no cost at all. We do have programs to support indigenous population in the city of South Australia, and we provide trainings and organize role model workshops for them, having a few indigenous role models in the community already. We have collaborated successfully with Australian Federal Police a bit further out of Adelaide to reduce the risks for Indigenous people in the community, especially for those who are in a disadvantaged situation. As a part of the service, it's been it's interesting collaboration, but we do have, on the basics of sport for our community, we do have vocal studio, which we found very beneficial to reduce the stress and anxiety, and especially for the groups which are from disadvantaged situations where they can sing and connect together while singing, which the program is can be applied to almost any person, regardless of their background, as the program we use offers more than 50,000 songs in all different languages, which is great, especially when we engage with recently displaced people from and refugees. We do accommodate and provide trainings and mentoring and try and help to settle to people who just came to Australia. And we've been doing that, like, let's say, from the very beginning, when we've just been founded in 2014. Also, the group of volunteers in our organization have organized a various number of cultural events, and within the city of Marion as well, which were very successful. And we plan to have a permanent facility and facilitate different events for the community, which are cultural based or community based or sport based. And having the permanent facility will give us the opportunity to plan ahead and plan properly. Currently, we have to move every single project from venue to venue, and just the training facility, which is down at Marion Fitness and Leisure Centre, which pretty stable. We do have a club who provides training at Glendale Community Centre as well, which is becoming more and more popular. Mount Barker and City of Salisbury, that's four main clubs which we operate from. And having the permanent facility will enable us to service wider community and have more projects and serve wider and more diverse group of residents in City of Marion.
Thank you. And very close to 5 minutes as well. Thank you. Any questions from the councillors? Councillor Taylor.
In terms of your member, it might be in the documents, and forgive me if I've misread it or haven't picked it up. I don't think I have picked it up. In terms of the membership, like, how many members do you actually have at the club? And is the facility that you're looking at, based on the membership, is that actually big enough? Because reading through the documents, you've got, you do your vocal singing. So there's different activities happening. So I just wanted to know whether the actual facility that you're looking at moving into, is that just for your fitness and martial arts, or is it for everything that's in this document?
Yes, so the facility basically would be the home for all the projects we mentioned in the document. The way we're going to accommodate all the programs and the projects in one facility, in one building, is just because they will be running on different times of the week and on the different time of the days. For example, in the morning, the building will be busy with children, with the trainings for children or people who are retired when they have free time. Then later on, it will be trainings for someone who just finished work and for children who finished school. Then on weekends, we can have vocal studio, which not going to be loud at all, like, assuming there will be a question about the neighborhood and how it's going to work. It says in the document karaoke nights, but it's probably misspelled. So it's going to be a vocal studio and the possibility of the community getting together. That's going to be the group of people getting together at a certain period of time for a certain time to this particular project or activity.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Councillor Valescu?
So if you had to choose your ideal venue type, what would be the features that you'd be looking for to best further the organisation's cause?
Thank you for your question. So the ideal venue for us will be public transport accessible. As I said, we provide trainings for children from disadvantaged families, and they do use public transport to get to the training. Also, it should be quite big, as the sport we train and the training will require space, as well as a few rooms and the parking, like pretty basic requirements, but the public transport and accessibility will be the main features we would ask for.
If there are no others, well, thank you, Ms. Filipova. You can take your place back in the gallery. And if maybe one of our staff could help hand out the brochures that were provided there to put whatever in front of each councillor, that would be appreciated. But we will move on to the next item, which may not take too long. I know that in relation to this petition regarding Fryer Reserve, that Councillor Crossland has suggested some... I'm not sure if it's alternative or additional wording. I'll just ask one question first. Normally, we would have part of the recommendation to advise the head petitioner, and that I didn't notice that in the agenda. So should that be added to both, well, whether it's Councillor Crossland's wording? And Councillor Crossland, you're happy with that?
I am, Your Worship, and so, the wording is now pretty much on the screen, the additional bit that I added.
And you're, just for those who can't read it, your point is...
It's just to make the point, we note the petition and advise the head petitioner, but also a confirmation that if that site is used as a lay-down area, the contractor will be topsoiling and reseeding the area they use. And also of note for other elected members that may not be aware is Fryer Street Reserve is due to be all dug up and re-landscaped. We're having a new toilet there, new pathways, shade, picnic benches, drinks, fountains. It's having the whole works, which ties in nicely that whatever happens to that side, it'll all be redone at the end.
And that was your contribution as you moved it. Very efficient. Is that seconded? Councillor Masika, thank you. Any contribution? No. Then does anyone speak against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Sorry, all councillors. In fact, all councillors are in favour, so that's carried unanimously. Thank you. And that means that I'll just deal with one issue. We said we're going to move the confidential item to the end of the meeting. Let's say the confidentiality order will also be moved to the end of the meeting. There's no objection to that, because that then brings us to the item on page 29, which is about the old Mitchell Park Neighbourhood Centre at 1 Cumbria Court. So I'll just let... now, this is one where Councillor Luscombe has already noted her material conflict of interest due to her employment. There's certainly nothing untoward about that, and it's an appropriate choice for her to leave the room during the proceedings. Councillors, I've given some thought about how to proceed, and it's never easy when there are multiple options and different permutations, but it appears to me that it would make sense first to see if there's any interest among the elected body in any of the leases, and if there is no majority for any of those three options, then I would invite the motion to be put in relation to demolition of the building and returning it to green space. We'll get to the details of that later, because there are a couple of possible variations. And in terms of dealing with the potential tenancies, I can't think of anything fairer than going with the order in which we've heard the deputations, which in turn happened to be the order in which the requests for deputations came in. So there's no real science to it, but it's as fair as anything. I just want to give councillors this instruction. We are bound by the formal rules of debate. So therefore, we work in a yes or no framework. It's not like preferential voting where you go to the ballot box for a member of parliament or something like that. That's why we're working through each option. So as we go through the potential tenancy of Puddle Jumpers, Bowden Brompton School, the Sambo Federation, if you, councillor, if you have a preference for the demolition and return to green space option, you simply vote no for each of the three motions that we put first. If you prefer the second or third tenancy option, then you vote no to the first one and vote yes to the one that you want. And so we're just going to work through it systematically. I hope that's clear with everybody. So, Councillor Bilescu, question?
Yeah, I guess we've got three organisations that provide different valuable services in the community. I'm just wondering if at the end of the process for whichever we select, there'll be people that miss out, whether the council staff can look at working with those organisations to see what other opportunities there are, and if we can add something like that in the motion, be it grant opportunities, working with the economic development and some of the vacant, unutilised private sites, that sort of stuff.
Councillor, my suggestion would be, this is complicated enough as it is, okay. I'd suggest that that could be handled informally and administratively.
Sure. Okay.
Mr Harrison, our Chief Executive, is agreeing to that. Yep. So there can be continuing dialogue with each of the three parties. I don't think they'll all be getting a lease. But I appreciate the generosity of the point. Now, having given that procedural framework for you, councillors, I'll invite someone, if anyone wishes to move that a lease be granted to, the wording is a bit tricky because we're going from, I have to refer to the recommendations drafted by staff that appear on pages 30 and 31. So when I talk about these in shorthand, we're really talking about clauses 1, 2, 3 and 4, if that's what councillors wish to do. But obviously I'm inviting someone to initially test the water with the Puddle Jumpers option, And then, as I said, we'll work through them sequentially. Obviously, if we get a yes at any point working through it, that's the end of the process. If we keep getting no's, we just keep working through the process until we get to a yes. So would somebody like to move the puddle jumpers option, if I can call it that? I can't twist anybody's arm to do so. I'll give it last call. If nobody does, then we'll simply proceed to the next option. Very well. We'll proceed to the next option. Would anyone like to move that the tenancy be granted Bowden Robinson School? Councillor Masika, yes, would you like to speak to that?
Thanks, Your Worship. The reason I'm voting yes to this, just consider that the Puddle Jumper is already have a space within the Marion, City of Marion, who are operating from Glendale, and also Sabo. I think also they are working from Sambo, they are also working from Glendale Community Center. So the only organization which has left out, which is providing a very good service, which we believe that is required to meet the needs of the kids who are coming from Marion, Council of Marion, is the Bowden Brompton Primary School, school. And that's why I'm proposing them, that it's really good to provide them with the space where all these kids which are disengaged with education, with employment, they can be turned back into become the good members of the society. Otherwise, if we push them aside with no any other consideration, we are likely as a community will suffer more. And that's why we see more kids with antisocial behaviors and everything. So I believe from my heart that they deserve to be given a chance to be turned back, to be good members of the society.
Cues that seconded. Seconded Councillor Naismith, did you wish to speak to it? Is there anyone speaking against the motion? There appears to be no one speaking further, so there's no need for any reply to the debate, and we can simply proceed to a vote. So those in favour, please raise your hand. I find that the vote is carried. So we need go no further with the process. And I thank members of the public for attending. And we will move on to our next item of business. Members of the public are welcome to stay, but you're also welcome to quietly go. Thanks again for your interest. We're moving on to page 116, Edwardstown Football Club. License variation. Councillor Masika.
Thank you so much, Your Worship. I would like to start by commending the staff for being able to come with such a wonderful motion, which is before us tonight. I know it has been a wish, my wish as a councillor, and also the wish of taxpayers, ratepayers, and also the wish of the General Council to see that the council facilities are being used effectively and efficiently. So the motion which has been presented to us tonight for decision, it ticks all the boxes because it's going to save the ratepayers about $40,000 a year. It's going to improve the efficiency in terms of booking processes. And also it's going to provide a clear referral pathways for administration whenever we have other clients coming from other parts of the council that can be referred to utilize the Edwardstown Football Club facilities, which is belongs to Marion Council. And that's why I'd like to move the motion as printed. And it's good way, it's good, and it's going to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of usage of our council facilities.
I'm sorry, I'm just having some discussion from staff. We're just noting that Councillor Luscombe left the room for a previous item, and of course she's now at liberty to return. I hope she hasn't gone home. And now I will just say one thing there, Councillor Masika, with the greatest respect. When there is a factual clarification that needs to be made, I've done this before and I'll keep doing it. Councillor Masika's quoted from the report a saving to council of $40,000. And I just note that that amount is less revenues from functions or sales that would have been earned by council had the previous council resolution been carried out by staff as directed. So I can see how that could easily be misread. The cost to council is stated clearly in the report. And of course, there's no precise amount for what would have been earned, but that would need to be taken into account as well. It's just that it might seem a minor point, but I didn't want anyone to be left under a different impression. I'll ask if the motion is seconded. Councillor Crossland.
I'm happy to second it, but I'd just like staff to clarify a couple of points, which I've already had clarified personally. The gross rent, how that's made up, and confirmation that our 93% discount is still being applied to that building. It's just not very clear in the report how that figure has been arrived at.
Mr. Hubbard's going to address us on that.
Thank you, Councillor Crosland, for that question. I can confirm that the breakdown is the current 7 months period or the current agreement that we have. There's $2,138 being applied, which is the 93% discount being applied to that rental amount. So the total gross amount includes that as a rental component.
And just to clarify, the gross amount also includes electricity, cleaning, et cetera, for the common areas of the building, which the footy club contributes a proportion to, as do other clubs.
That's correct. And they also pay or contribute towards the known direct costs where we have meters in place, such as for the lighting and the ovals, which we can allocate directly to the club. So there's the gross rental amount, including the rent, plus they also have to pay for additional costs, which we know we can directly attribute to their use of the facility.
Thank you, Your Worship. That's all my questions.
Thank you. While we're on the topic, I did have a question. There's a comment about the cricket club being happy. It's not really a conflict of interest, but we can call it a general conflict of interest because I'm patron of the South Road Cricket Club by virtue of my elected position. But is there any issue with them being able to rent the space they need over the summer with the football club being in charge of the upstairs area instead of council?
Thank you, Mayor. No, there shouldn't be. We will still provide them access to use the canteen as part of the current license agreement, and they have been offered opportunities to use the bowling club downstairs and upstairs on a couple of occasions.
Very good. Well, it's been moved and seconded. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. Yes, that's carried unanimously. Thank you, everyone. So, and thanks, Mr. Hubbard. So we can move on to the response to the parliamentary inquiry into the urban forest, page 119. Now, I can say that some detailed work was done in the Environment Committee, almost sentence by sentence scrutiny of the draft. So not just staff, but one could say the Environment Committee showed general support for the submission as it stands. Someone like to move a motion? Councillor, questions first, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. There's two items in the list that I don't agree with, and I don't know whether just to move an amendment or whether there is going to be merit to suspend standing orders just to discuss those two items. I'll give you...
That might be the best way to do it, because others might have issues as well. So you're moving to suspend standing orders. Please. Seconded Councillor Valescu. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So what we're trying to do here is just clarify any points of uncertainty or division so that we can see if we can get a unified approach when we move the item. We may or may not. But Councillor Crossland, what were your two points?
Thank you, Worship. The two points, on the actual motion, it's item 10. Which is the state government reviews the list of declared weeds and considers including exemptions for species that may have a low threat in urban areas. That one I have issues with. And then it's sort of duplicated in the motion at number 17, which says basically declared weeds should not have a blanket exemption from planning approvals.
Just asking Ms. Newman to come up, who may be of assistance. Just on the weeds issue, perhaps it is better to hear from staff first and then other councillors may wish to chip in.
And on the list, for some reason, they appear at number 9 and number 16, so they're one.
So, Councillor Crossland, what I thought you were talking about was on page 128.
On 128, they're in that position,
but yep.
They also appear again on our table on page 123.
Right, yeah. Easier if we go with the actual draft, which is on 128. So that's paragraph 10. And I think, did you mention another one?
Paragraph 17.
Yes. So, Ms. Newman, have you got, what justification would you offer for those two clauses?
Yeah.
Please.
So recommendation number 10, which was about reviewing the list of declared weeds and considering exemptions for species that have a low threat in urban areas, that was to do with the need. So in the future, when we have more heat waves and less water available, the thinking, the logic behind it is that there may be current species which are considered to be weeds, which would be more resilient in these areas. So that's species such as olives and ash trees, Aleppo pines, that are currently declared weeds. And we're looking to try and increase the diversity of the urban forest. And if we have areas where they're a low threat to biodiversity and a low threat to, expansion and that sort of thing, that those species may actually be suitable for use as street trees and other areas in difficult locations. The other recommendation, which was around, it was number 17. So that was the declared weeds under the Landscapes Act should not have a blanket exemption from planning approvals, and instead applications could be made for defined areas, such as woody weed control along a creek line. That was about, there are currently trees such as Aleppo pines as well, and potentially olives, that exist in areas which are of low biodiversity that may have other heritage values and other values currently, and that at the moment the current system is that those trees would just be removed immediately without any, they can by the landowner be removed without any further discussion. And we're just suggesting that perhaps if we're trying to retain as many trees as possible, that those trees shouldn't just have an immediate blanket exemption.
So, Councillor Crossland, perhaps I'll go back to you. Does that change your view?
No, Your Worship, I've already had this conversation with Ms. Newman before the meeting, so I knew what she was going to say. Look, I am fairly passionate about biodiversity and particularly the loss of biodiversity as a result of most of the trees, particularly olives, that Ms. Newman has just mentioned. You don't have to go far in our own council to see whole streets and reserves now full of Aleppo pines and olives, and in fact national parks, where the only species virtually left are the weeds. Now, the counter argument would be, if we just got reserves and parks full of one tree species, it sort of goes against what this is trying to achieve, which is, if there's something that wipes out one species and that's the only one we've got, there's nothing left. So my alternative view is that I think staff would agree there's plenty of trees other than olives and Aleppo pines that can grow in hot climates. I've been to many and they do grow there that are not invasive. Why don't we just support recommending those trees rather than keeping the ones which are destroying what we've got left?
I'll just let this go on a bit. Ms. Newman, can you respond to that? Or do you have any response to that point that's been made?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the perspective as well. And so this is really trying to make sure that we still protect areas of biodiversity. So we're not suggesting that we wouldn't do woody weed control in those areas. It's really about just trying to make sure that we can protect as much tree canopy as we can. So that's for those existing trees, but in the future, trying to be perhaps, you know, look for opportunities for diversity, including species of ash tree and other trees, which actually are very hardy and quite good in urban areas. But currently we wouldn't plant them at all because they're declared species. It's about, yeah, having a broader conversation around what suitable urban trees might look like.
I'll just open it up to other councillors if they have any questions. Yes, Councillor Luscombe.
Thank you, Ms. Newman. I'm curious around if you can talk to the benefits of to the community and potentially to the environment and to birds and other species of the opportunity to keep olive trees or Aleppo pines or Casuarina glaucas. Are you able to answer some questions, I suppose, around how, what's the benefit of potentially keeping them as opposed to getting rid of them?
Through the chair. So at the moment we would still, I would absolutely recommend removing those species in areas that are biodiversity sites. So in areas that are, you know, they may invade or cause any further damage. Currently species such as Aleppo pines, you know, they are a good food source for yellow-tailed black cockatoos and species like that. There are examples of other birds in particular that will benefit from certain weed species. So it's more thinking about those trees in highly urbanised areas, so areas where it's difficult to grow any other trees, or it's difficult to, you know, we're not treating them as biodiversity sites and not going to be spreading into protected areas and that sort of thing.
If there aren't any other questions, what I want to do is just have a mini vote. This is not binding, but we're just in, whilst standing orders are suspended, just testing this particular position. Either we, is it leave out 10 and 17 or keep them in? So I'm just asking you for a show of hands on that, members. I'll put it in this way. Who thinks they should be taken out? Who thinks they should stay in? All right. It's not compulsory voting, but it looks like there's a majority, so I'd suggest in the motion that we leave it in, but it can all be subject of amendment if Councillor Crossland wants to proceed that way. And you had another one, Councillor Crossland, did you? So, Ms. Newman, there's a few mentions there on, you know, estate planning laws, but could it be stronger? Should it be stronger? Why have we taken the approach we have in the draft, please?
So there are several recommendations in there that were raised through the submission on the planning system implementation review, which are those related to tree protection laws in particular. Suggestion could maybe that we highlight the planning system as a priority within the covering letter.
So, Councillor Crossland, are you happy if we stress that point in our cover letter, which will come from administration, I think, or the mayor, whatever. And indeed, that would echo what we've already done in our submission regarding the planning code itself. So what we're left with, I now resume standing orders, and therefore we're really after the motion as printed. Councillor Valescu?
I'm happy to move as is, taking into account what Councillor Crossland has mentioned in regards to that last discussion. I guess the argument that I had was that whilst not ideal, using the levers that we have to improve tree canopy on private land or to maintain tree canopy on private land. So that's what this recommendation was looking at. But apart from that, I'd like to thank all members who contributed on the night and also beforehand. And I put it to councillors to support.
Seconded. Councillor Luscombe, you wish to speak? Don't. Then is there any opposition, Councillor Crossland?
Just so I get it on the record. Look, I wasn't there for the actual environment discussion, but I would have definitely tried to highlight the hard work that a lot of our volunteers on biodiversity sites are currently doing. And I can tell you that probably over half of what we deal with is infestation from the very weeds you want to keep. Sort of bit disappointing if we're just going to give up on them. But I do appreciate we're looking at the potential of climate change, but I'd like to try and save a bit more of what we've got rather than just give up.
Any other speakers in favour? If not, then Councillor Valescu, any closing remarks?
I think we could probably work on a common ground on that option as far as the declared weeds. So hopefully, the action that results can mitigate some of those concerns about infestation in certain areas. So, regardless of where this goes, hopefully that we can work towards the same goal.
I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried by majority is the call. Division is called. So this is where those in favour, can you please stand? And we'll record the way people have voted. They are councillors Luscombe, Valescu, Naismith, Lama, Taylor, Hoffman and Masika. You may sit down. And those in the negative, please stand. They are councillors Crossland, Mates, Telfer and Pryor. So the motion is carried. Thank you. And we go on to page, and thanks, Ms. Newman, for your contribution. We go on to page 153, gap year and traineeship program funding. A couple of options presented there. Question or?
Just a general question. Option one has no cost per year, and option two has a cost. So I'm just wondering why that there's the difference in the two in the motion, if there's a reason for that.
And Ms. Vinyl's coming up to give some advice on that. And I've been advised there's a last-minute change of tack from staff who are suggesting some alternate wording, and perhaps Ms. Vinyl can explain the reasoning there.
Now, my apologies, there was a late change to the costing just because we realised that there was an error in it. So option one is seeking a continuation of the current funding arrangements that are in place. So we have, my understanding is, and Ray can probably assist me with this, but my understanding is that we do have in place an arrangement where we are funding five positions, three traineeship and two gap year. So it's a continuation of exactly what we've got in place that we're seeking for option A there for on an ongoing basis, essentially, until such time as council determines that they don't want to do it any further.
Why is the cost not identified in option A, but it is identified in some form in option B? Is it extra funding that you're looking at, or?
No, it's not. It's an equitable arrangement over a three-year period that we have identified for option B, but it is an ongoing annual cost of $240,000, but that is subject to increases in the enterprise agreement.
In other words, the option A represents the fact there are already council motions in place for that to just roll over every year, that $240,000 a year. In a sense, option B is setting in place a review period. Any other questions? If not, or Councillor Crossland? Yes.
It's probably a question for Mr. Harrison or staff. Currently, we have five gap year programs. Now, there was some discussion around making them two of them potentially for university students so that the organisation could look at potentially grabbing someone at uni and actually getting them into the City of Marion to actually get some value for residents. Can I just have an update of, is that included in this? Is that able to be looked at, or are we just now just going down the same path that we've been treading for 4 or 5 years? And the second question, which is going to be relevant, is what value have our ratepayers had? I know it's been valuable to some of the young people, but what has been the value back to residents of these programs?
Yeah, certainly the university graduate aspect does not appear in the motion. It's a very good question what we're doing to harness that talent and at what cost. Mr. Harrison.
So through the chair, we are delineating between this program and our ongoing everyday efforts to recruit people directly through university graduate programs. And even since we raised this topic with the previous council, we've improved our relationship together with City of Mitcham, with Flinders University, to bring direct graduate entries into the organisation, which we have done and we continue to do. So we're bringing those in as new full-time employees, if you like, with a graduate qualification straight from the university sector. The second aspect of the value proposition, yes, is a personal development value proposition for the individuals, but it is now also the case that we're giving full-time ongoing employment opportunities to people that actually come through the traineeship and the gap year program. And I'm not sure exactly how many, but we have afforded people, and we've got people working in the council at the moment that have actually come through these pathways on an ongoing permanent basis.
Thank you.
And if I may add to that, Mr. Harrison, I'm not sure if you covered it, but what about the option of internships of university students? And I ask that to give you an example. When we were doing activation, et cetera, of Edwardstown, we initially received an excellent report covering activation, amenity, access, and so forth. And I said, this is one of the best consultants' reports we've had. Who did this? And staff finally confessed it was a university student that was coming in to do it for free. And it was a win-win, truly win-win situation. So I wonder what efforts are being made in that regard.
So through the chair, I might need to get advice in relation to the terminology of internship and its application. But I'm confident saying it is the case we're still affording placements to facilitate the completion of undergraduate courses. So a number of engineers and other things that require a placement factor, we are still affording those opportunities. It's to our advantage. We also think to the advantage of, obviously, the student obtaining their undergraduate qualifications as well.
Thank you. And as to the second part of the question, did you have anything more to add on benefit to ratepayers from the $240,000 per year?
Well, certainly with a very tight labour market, I think it is a great pathway opportunity, and we're demonstrating the fact now we're affording ongoing employment through these pathways. Previous debate in the chamber with the previous council, there was a strong sentiment, I recall, that a number of elected members thought that we had some civic responsibility to support our young people who actually live in the city of Marion. So that was a strong sentiment that came through previously when we were looking at potentially tweaking the dimensions of these sorts of programs. But certainly we have taken a strong view and we've done a fair bit of research through our training and development coordinator person that we are now really reaping the benefits of bringing people in 12 months and affording them full-time ongoing employment and then backfilling behind them. At the moment, we've just had two new start in the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yes, and some very good ones have graduated into council employment. You can find a couple at the West Torrens Council, for example. Now, any further questions? Because otherwise we'll go into a motion. Who would like to move? Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to move Part B of the proposed motion. And the reason of doing that, there's a dollar sign figures there, and then we know there's the enterprise agreement coming. So we won't have a need to come back and revisit up the motion. So that's why I'm proposing up Part B instead of Part A.
Certainly it builds in a review process whereby we would come back and have a look in 3 years' time. Is that seconded? Councillor Mates, do you wish to speak to that?
No, I have nothing to say.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Telfer?
I'll move an amendment if it's accepted. Yes. I'll move that approves the continuation of funding for inclusive traineeship programs within the City of Marion, etc. So I'm taking out the gap year students. This is in line with our discussions that we have had in the past about the inclusive traineeship value and exciting successes from that. But the whole issue of moving perhaps towards focusing on our graduates rather than our gap year students.
And thank you. I have a question before I ask for a seconder, and that is, I think they're paid $35,000 to $40,000 a year. Is that about right? The high school students who work for us paid the gap year students.
Yep. So sorry. Through the chair.
Sorry.
We are budgeting at $48,000 per student per year.
Right. So is that...
Including on costs, my apologies.
Including on costs, yes. So is the motion seconded, the amendment seconded? Just to clarify, we would proceed with the three inclusive traineeships. There's three different categories there, but not the school leaver gap year trainees. According to the amendment. Now, is that amendment seconded? Councillor Pryor?
I just have a question about the amendment.
Yes,
first. Thank you.
Sure.
Now the issue of the dollar value is present. So we've taken the inclusive trainee, the gap year students out, but not their dollar value. So
would that be amended to, we've got a revised figure for the amendment. I mean, I think it is an acceptable amendment because there were two things bundled together. This is taking one out. I don't think it's a reversal of the motion. It's an acceptable amendment.
And with the dollar figure, the appropriate dollar figure, I'll second that.
Right. And you'll see that on the screen now. So $144,000 instead of $240,000. The procedure with when there is an amendment that's been moved and seconded is that it is put straight away without further debate. So I'll ask people to vote on that proposal. Just to be clear, dropping the school leaver positions, but including the three inclusive traineeship positions. All those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hand. All those against the amendment, please raise your hand. The amendment is lost. So we are left with the motion As it stands, the five positions in total, $240,000 per year, reviewed after 3 years. Anyone who hasn't yet spoken in the debate may speak. Councillor Luscombe.
Thank you, Your Worship. With regard to the original motion, I'm wondering to Councillor Telfer's comments whether we should make an amendment to that motion around investigating the option for university internships or university students as an extra sentence or an extra part of that motion, if that would assist Councillor Telfer with regard to the university students.
That would be quite different to the amendment because it would be an addition to the current two categories rather than withdrawing a category. But there could be an amendment to somehow confirm university internships and graduate employment, but we may want some advice on that. So I'll ask Mr. Harrison, thanks.
Through the chair, can I just give it a view in relation to that proposition? It's very, very difficult to attract a undergraduate who's completed their training and is now qualified into an internship because there is so many full-time jobs around, particularly in areas that we would facilitate, such as engineering. So I'd suggest that we wouldn't actually be able to see that through, even if that was supported by the Chamber. I would strongly support the view that the current combinations or configurations gives us flexibility to take in young people from different pathways to the benefit of the City of Marion. I don't think we would be able to facilitate undergraduates who have finished their training actually coming in on an internship because there are so many well-paid full-time positions around across all organisations at the moment.
Yes, I think there's a confusion arising from the word intern. So for me, when we talk about the school leavers, perhaps as interns, but I use that term for people who are undergraduates within their degree doing some practical experience as a component of their degree. Graduate employment is really a different matter, and you're in the open market to get those people. So back to you, Councillor Luscombe. Does that discussion help at all? Do you want to move an amendment, or do you want to leave it, or what?
I'm happy to leave it. I was just trying to help, really. But it may be that that's a separate motion, that we investigate unpaid placements for students currently completing a university degree, if that's an option to investigate.
And thank you. So it is current practice. We are doing it. And I take it that for those who are doing a university placement, perhaps that's more accurate language, there's no direct cost to us other than the time that we take to train people and work with them. Ms. Vinyl?
Through the chair, the majority of them are literally at no cost to us. There are a very select few that may incur a very, very small cost in terms of a small payment to the student for their services at the time. Now, I can't give you the exact details of those. I can come back to Chamber with that information if you would like it, but it is quite a negligible amount.
Rather than a question on notice, could we just say if you've got further information vis-a-vis either graduate employment or university placements, just send an email around to councillors. Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, I'm happy to support the motion as it currently stands, but I think we will be assessing the value of the gap year students, see how many have stayed behind in 3 years, see the benefit provided during their tenure. I guess as long as it's not a training program for other councils or other organisations, I'm happy to keep it. But if it turns out like that, then I think that Councillor Telfer's amendment should be considered in the future. My only hesitation to support it this time is just the fact of the labour market is so tight, and just trying to build that relationship with people that will stay for a while, I think is really important.
Well, I expect we'll all be here in 3 years' time if we keep lodging our forms, so we can review it then. Now, I've had a speaker in favour. Are there any other speakers against? If not, then it's up to Councillor Crossland, Masika, sorry, to make any closing remarks.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to make a closing remarks by acknowledging the views which has been put forward by Councillor Talfa. I say, look, as a council, I think it's justified and it's imperative and it's a moral right to connect with the school leavers, in high schools within the council boundaries, and that it will promote, this gap year positions will be the vehicle for connecting the council with those schools, and it will leave that good lasting images with those young people to know that the council is there supporting them and they'll be there to support the council. I quite agree with your propositions that when we come for the review, as Councillor Valescu put it, we are quite happy to go back and revisit up everything and we can make another determination. But for the time being, I quite assure you that let's support up the motion and when time is due, we'll revisit the motion.
Thank you. So I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. So going to page 156, the election process for the GAROC representative. So just to cover some ground, not everyone's familiar with it. The LGA has a structure whereby there's a Metropolitan Council's Board and a Country Council's Board. And they form, in a sense, an electoral college to then vote in the local government association board altogether. Now, the Metropolitan Board, which is meant to look after the interests of metropolitan councils, is divided into wards, effectively, so that we are in a group with Onkaparinga and Mitcham. So it's pretty well a three-way contest. And the Mitcham Mayor is the current chair of the GAROC group, like a board, and the mayors of Onkaparinga and Marion have both nominated or been nominated by their councils, to be precise. So now it comes to the vote. Given that there's, I don't really want to be in the position of voting for myself, so I think I will vacate the chair at this point and ask the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Telfer, to come forward and take it from here. I have I will actually, having declared a general interest, I'll leave the room.
So, members, we have before us a motion with a whole lot of crosses for a name. Do we have a name to bring forward there that people would like to bring forward? Sorry, sit up high to see over the screen. I didn't know that. I saw Councillor Pryor, and would you like to bring a name forward?
Yeah, I think Mayor Hannah would be the name I'd like to bring forward.
All right.
Surprisingly.
Are there any other names that people want to bring forward? All right, we have a motion there. Moved Councillor Pryor. Do we have a seconder? Seconder Councillor Valescu. Is there anybody speaking against? All right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. The Mayor can return.
Right. Thank you, Deputy Mayor Telfer. Now, the ALGA National General Assembly call for notices of motions, page 164. Did we have anything? I'll ask staff if anything came in from councillors?
Through the chair, no, we've had no motions to be submitted. We've had one nomination to attend, which is Councillor Hoffman.
Splendid. So councillors will note that the four clauses have been prepared by staff. We don't need two and three. We obviously will note the report, and we can, if only one person has expressed interest, that does simplify it. But are there any other nominations for travelling to Canberra in June? If not, then I would suggest we can move a motion having Councillor Hoffman as the City of Marion voting delegate, and we can leave the other bit blank unless there's a name coming forward. Councillor Valescu?
No, there's no name coming forward, but I guess if there's a process, so next time we can actually, if issues come up, that would be good motions, that they're actually recorded throughout the year, so especially with new elected members. So therefore, there are things for us to consider as opposed to nothing. And I'm sure we can all think of things that could do with national representation.
You'll find when you get there, it's a full agenda with every conceivable topic just about. But it's a good suggestion and can easily be done administratively.
Yep, through the chair, we do that, but generally they come up through the local LGA rather than the national. So we did have a couple on the list to bring forward.
Councillor Taylor, you moving the motion?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please do.
Is this a yearly activity? Okay.
Did you want to move the motion?
Can move it.
Noting the report and nominating Councillor Hoffman. Now, we've got an issue here with Councillor Hoffman and a conflict of interest, Ms. McKenzie? I think Councillor Hoffman might be advised to leave the room before we go any further.
Yes, just in regards to the costs associated with the conference and attending the interstate travel.
Yep, normally paid, borne by council. So that would be a material conflict of interest. Councillor Hoffman, motion's been moved. Is it seconded? Councillor Masika, thank you. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. If somebody could invite Councillor Hoffman back in, that'd be good. Right. We get to the work, health and safety and finance could be taken on block. Obviously, questions can go either. Yes, Councillor Pryor's doing that.
That's exactly what I wanted to do. Thank you.
And seconded Councillor Telfer. That doesn't stop anyone asking any pressing questions about those reports. All right, there being none, any further comment, then I'll put the motions. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. That takes us back to the one remaining item, I believe, and we must deal with the question of whether we should go into confidence. This you'll see on page 28. Is what we call the cover report, and the appropriate section references to the Local Government Act. Clearly, when you're talking about people's business affairs, that is one of the reasons to go into confidence. So would someone like to move that way? Councillor Pryor, seconded Councillor Crossland. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And so apart from those staff for whom the report is relevant regarding the Boat Shed Cafe. We'll ask others to leave the room and we'll go into confidence for this final item. I'll just draw councillors' attention to the fact there was an email, I think it was today, if not, might have been yesterday, that came through with some financial information. Well, are there any questions or we're getting straight into it, Councillor Pryor?
Yep, I have a question. My question is regarding the funding, and it's really about, have we come back to council to ask for $150,000 of contingency funding, so we don't have to come back to council to ask for $150,000 contingency funding if it need if it's needed? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Ah, it's
not making sense at the moment. But oh no,